Good evening and welcome. Sanjay Kumar Varma, among the senior most Indian diplomats, was India's High Commissioner to Canada till recently. He was called back by New Delhi, but he was also the first Indian ambassador or High Commissioner in India's history to be declared persona non grata by what has been a friendly partner nation, in this case, Canada. We're very privileged to have him back in the NDTV studio or in the NDTV studio, and glad that he's back in the country. Thank you very much for being with us. This all has to do with several allegations which have been made by the Canadians about the death of a person we consider a terrorist, Nijjar. We'll talk about Canada's concerns and what they've said, but I think the point that really has to be made is that we have at least 26 people who we want extradited from Canada. These are people we believe to have been associated with terrorism or are terrorists. Why has Canada denied us those requests?
In most of the cases, I feel there is an inaction on the Canadian side. In some cases, of course, they have sought some more details or sought some clarifications. And we are quite okay with that because, after all, we have two different legal systems. And if we want their legal system to act on our behalf, we need to give them the information that they wanted. From our perspective, it had gone through a due process, and therefore all the evidences that we had already been presented to them in the 26 extradition cases which we just talked about. But in addition to extradition, there are many arrest requests also pending. And unfortunately, we have not seen much of action from the Canadian authorities in this particular case for almost last one decade.
So, in fact, the association of Canada with those we consider terrorists is long. I mean, there was the tragedy of Kanishka in 1985, June 23rd, 329 people died. And in the case itself in Canadian courts went on for two decades. And ultimately, there was no justice because both of those accused, Ripu Daman Singh Malik and Ajayb Singh Bagri, were acquitted. It's been described as a Canadian tragedy, but one obviously with an Indian link.
Absolutely. And you know, what happened is that in one of the Canadian governments, they set up another commission. And the justice who was leading that commission came out with very scathing remarks on the way in which the entire thing was botched up by the Canadian investigators. Not only it was procedurally botched up, but even the evidences were misplaced or deleted conversations. We were the ones, our agencies were the ones who provided them all the heads up. Before this tragic incident happened.
I ask you all of this because it appears that there is a bit of a double standard, not a bit, a pretty big double standard. On the one hand, India makes allegations against India allegedly being involved in the murder of this man. It's one thing to state that there are allegations, but Canada's own role in harboring or looking the other way while people with these backgrounds or this background exists on its soil, that's deeply dubious, some would suggest.
Absolutely. You know, the double standards, one law for you, another law for me, that doesn't go around in the world any longer. The countries of South, global South, they used to follow what the developed countries would call and tell them. But gone are those days. We are a country of rule of law. We need to see evidences before taking any action. Now, as far as this particular murder is concerned, there are a lot of gang wars going on in Canada. Who knows what has happened? And so far, we do not have any hard evidence shared with us.
I'll come to that, sir, in a moment. But it just, again, it seems bizarre almost that on the one hand, the Canadians for the last 1 year plus have been speaking to you, raising these allegations, and then all of a sudden, you became a person of interest to them. When this entire process took place, did you detect, I don't know, animosity or greater questioning or greater suspicion or anything of that sort?
Never. In fact, my relationship with my interlocutors in all the ministries, including the foreign ministry in Canada, was extremely, extremely cordial. All of a sudden, on the 12th, which was a Sunday, I met them in the foreign ministry. And I was told that I, along with other five of our officials and diplomats, are persons of interest. And therefore, the government of India should waive our immunity for them to interrogate us. Now, that was going a bit far as the diplomacy is concerned. So I reported back to Delhi. And rest is history. Delhi took the decision to call us back to India to withdraw us, and which was then reported by the then acting High Commissioner of Canada in Delhi. Thereafter, they took a call that they would rather call us persona non grata and sent us back packing within a given timeline.
And this I find strange. In India's history, you were telling me, in our diplomatic service, this is the first time an Indian High Commissioner or Ambassador has been declared persona non grata?
Absolutely.
In any country?
Any country.
But what about Pakistan? Because there have been differences over there. I'm just...
See, with Pakistan, we had known differences, and that has been going on for decades altogether.
Yes.
The last High Commissioner who was recalled happened to be my predecessor in Canada,
right.
Ambassador Ajay Bisaria. And when he came back to India, he remained in India as someone who was called back and remained as the High Commissioner of India to Pakistan, even though he was not resident in Pakistan.
But you're the first person, again, in India's diplomatic service who's been declared persona non grata?
First ambassador to be declared persona non grata, yes.
What Canada says is that they have provided evidence. They say that there was a meeting which took place in Singapore as well. All of this was actually shared. The Canadian foreign minister has gone on record saying that, and I quote, there is ample, clear and concrete evidence. Has any of this been shared with India?
As far as my information goes, no evidence, not shred of evidence has been shared with us. And if they're calling intelligence and leads as evidence, they will not be legally accepted either in their court of law or in my court of law.
In fact, they've also said, in a public statement, I think, this was said, if not by the Canadian government, then by the RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, that they have intelligence, but they don't have conclusive proof. I think this was shared by the Foreign Minister of Canada.
This was shared by the RCMP Deputy Commissioner. This, and more or less the same thing was told by the Prime Minister himself to the Foreign Interference Commission.
So they've made these accusations against you, and then they say they don't have conclusive evidence.
And that's quite funny, in fact, because what they did is quite a serious thing in the diplomatic practice. But they chose to declare me persona non grata, though I stood withdrawn from Canada. That's their prerogative, so I'll not be able to sort of tell them not to do it. But the Prime Minister himself, in one of the depositions, said very clearly that we didn't have hard evidence when he stood up, unfortunately, in the Parliament and said what he said on India.
So are they sort of hunting around in the dark for evidence against, you know, people they allege are involved in the death of this of Nijjar?
See, what I understand is that most of the things that they call evidence are hearsay, single source information. And there are many India baiters there who will be ready to give statements, false statements, which could then be single sourced as India harming their lives or things in Canada.
The RCMP, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, says in a statement, and I quote, investigations have revealed that Indian diplomats and consular officials based in Canada leverage their official positions to engage in clandestine activities such as collecting information for the government of India either directly or through their proxies and other individuals who acted voluntarily or through coercion. The first part of this, if a diplomat doesn't collect information, then what are you a diplomat for? What is your job?
You know, I'll break down a bit for the viewers. So there are two ways of collecting information. One is through the open source, which is the overt, and then there are covert. What I can tell you right away is that, yes, we depended on the overt information available, all open source. And we will collect the information from the media, we will collect the information from social media of these banned organizations who kept putting it out in Punjabi, and probably not many Canadians would understand. So we did that, we did the analysis, and then we did the trend. And trend was very clear. They wanted Canada-India relation destroyed. They wanted Indian image to be maligned in Canada and therefore probably in the Western world.
And India believes that this is all politically motivated, that there are elections coming up in Canada. This is being done by Justin Trudeau and his government and his close affiliates. Why do you believe that to be the case?
So one thing is that Mr. Trudeau himself has been known to be very close to the Khalistani extremists and terrorists. at least through his political outreach. He has in his close circles, both in cabinet as well as in the parliament, some of his friends who are not very well inclined towards a good Canada-India relation, and certainly not towards a healthy India. He has been now, I'm quoting, I don't want to get into the domestic politics of Canada, but I'm just quoting you what the media reports, the results of the survey. His party is not faring very well in the survey reports, and his own leadership is also threatened within his own party. Now, this is something I have not picked up from any other source. Otherwise, I will again be called as interfering in the domestic affairs there. So this is something which I have seen in the media published from Canada itself.
Could you tell us a little bit more, and you alluded to this earlier on factionalism which exists within Khalistani sympathizers, number one, and number two, how there is gangland-style warfare or battles, as it were, which do take place, and that somehow the death of Nijjar may have been involved with that. I mean, it has nothing to do with India. Could you describe to us the nature of this gangland warfare that takes place in parts of Canada?
So first of all, let's understand what is this Khalistani extremism and terrorism originating from Canada. This is a business. This is a business because the money collected through intimidation, through extortion by these Khalistanis, they use it to destabilize India and to have their own lavish lifestyles. So if it is a business, and if I'm trying to break that away, certainly there will be repercussions. And these repercussions are their threats to the Indian diplomats, Indian leaders. Our Prime Minister has been threatened. Our Home Minister has
been threatened. You've been
threatened. I have been threatened very recently, just to give you an anecdote. Very recently on Holi, I had 10 heads and I was sort of characterized as Ravan, and then my effigy was burnt as Ravan. There was another poster where people would come and practice their firearms on my face at that poster. So many things have gone on there, which would not happen in a polite society which respects others. So no cognizance of hate crime has been taken by any of the Canadian organizations or authorities.
The Royal Canadian Police that protected you, the Royal Canadian Mounted Police, believed that the threats against you were credible and that there was a specific threat to your life and to other diplomats?
Absolutely.
See, and this was conveyed to you repeatedly, right?
Repeatedly.
And you were protected over there.
See, the very fact that I had these RCMP officers protecting me, for which the Canadian taxpayers are paying, certainly there is a spin that I have a threat to my life. And same thing happened to both the consul generals in Vancouver and Toronto. So they were also being protected through the RCMP deployment.
And there were effigies you mentioned that were burnt. I think it was last year when there was an effigy of Indira Gandhi, the former prime minister, that went down Brampton in Ontario. Again, conveying a message which India just... I mean, it's one thing to say this is freedom of speech, but to a lot of people over here, it just seems bizarre that that can be used as some sort of an excuse to allow open hate against somebody who's dead.
You're absolutely right. And not only dead, she was the elected prime minister of one of the largest democracies in the world. A democracy which is friendly to Canada. When you demonstrate a bullet-ridden effigy of a former prime minister of India with the imagery of her bodyguards who shot it is nothing but the hate speech. And freedom of speech, even according to the Canadian law, can be limited on the basis of hate speech. You cannot propagate hate speech just in the name of freedom of expression. So my main problem with the way in which the freedom of expression is defined by the Canadian leaders is that, don't you see that is a hate speech? Can't you limit it? You didn't even approach the court of law to see if it can be limited. Which means that your inaction emboldens them to carry out again and again.
Yeah. The other allegation is, and I quote, individuals and businesses were coerced and threatened into working for the government of India. The information collected for the government of India is then used to target members of the South Asian community. How would you respond to this?
This is the most bizarre statement that I would know of, if there are gang wars going on, if there are extortion rackets in Canada, with the information of some of the extortionists given by us to Canadians, Goldie Brar's name would be known. I may not be at liberty to take other names, but Goldie Brar's name is well known. He was the kingpin of all the extortions and killings going on in Punjab, in Canada, as well as some in Punjab.
There is a Lawrence Bishnoi link now as well.
And Goldie Brar is linked to Lawrence Bishnoi. And these links, we have told them. They did not dream it overnight, that there is someone Lawrence Bishnoi.
So tell us about the Lawrence Bishnoi angle. He's in the news over here for several reasons. India believes that the Lawrence Bishnoi gang was part of a process to threaten who specifically in Canada? He was involved in the death of, his gang was involved in the death of Nijjar?
I will not be able to say for sure because the investigations are on. And that is what I wanted my Canadian colleagues also to understand, that till the time an investigation is on in a rule of law country, you do not come out with revelations what's going on in the investigation. Even after the investigation has concluded something, it has to go through a judicial process before you start convicting people. So in this case, anything which can go wrong has gone wrong.
And when you talk about revelations, there were leaks, right, to the Western media to convey a certain message, or which, would you suggest, didn't really accurately convey our views?
Both. When Prime Minister Trudeau got up in the parliament and said what he said, later on he himself has accepted that there was no hard evidence for him to tell. So if I have a large foreign relation with a particular country, won't I avoid that? Won't I say that the investigations are already on, so I'll wait till the time the investigation concludes? What was the rush?
Also in 2017 or 2018, he was here, right? And there were certain visits and certain engagements which we had problems with. What were those?
We had identified one particular Khalistani extremist who was on his invitation list for one of the evening events that he had, and that we conveyed to him.
And what did they say at that stage?
There were many excuses given for that, and there was passing of buck, as a bureaucrat would say. But finally, an invitation was issued to him in the name of the Prime Minister of a country. So we'll take it that seriously.
There is a linkage or an association which is being drawn between the developments in the United States with the Pannoon case and the allegations that India was involved in trying to eliminate this particular man and what has taken place in Canada. The U.S. seems to suggest that there has been progress in conversations with us. India seems to have taken action. This one particular person has been sacked. Is there some sort of association instigated or perpetrated by the government of India between what's happening in America and what's happening in Canada?
See, I'll not be able to talk about the U.S. because my mandate was India-Canada. As far as these two crimes or perceived crimes are concerned, they are two different crimes, two different places. But for Canada, for which I can talk about, unless you show us the evidence, unless you share the evidence with us, which can be legally accepted, what do you want us to do?
And you're confident because Canada has arrested, what, about six people, right?
Four
people. Do you believe that as the case progresses in court, there won't be any iota or shred of evidence which links India at all to the Nijjar case? You're confident?
There are two different investigations on. So one was the murder itself,
yes.
And there is another investigation on the perceived linkage of agents of the government of India with foreign interference and that particular murder. I am 100% sure that the second investigation will come back to a knot, but till the time the investigation is completed, our names are maligned.
Yeah.
India's name is maligned. So that is my main concern with them. As far as these four people are concerned who have been arrested for the first degree murder, if they have committed a crime, they should be punished. That's the rule of law country.
You know, sir, I noticed a few days before all of this happened with you and the other Indian diplomats that there was a statement that said that Canada respects the integrity of India. And I think I tweeted it out saying that perhaps this is a clear signal to Khalistani elements that, look, India is something we respect as an entity, right? As a physical entity, as a nation state. And therefore, outlets, that's where we draw the line. But then it just turned upside down with all of the allegations against you. When that initial statement was made, that we respect the territorial integrity of India, did you believe that in Canada things were headed in a positive direction?
Let me look at it from other perspective. As a member of the United Nations, can any country say that it doesn't respect the territorial integrity of another country? So that was neither here nor there.
Right.
I would like to see that in action. When you say you respect the territorial integrity, but allow your own citizens, all these Khalistani extremists and terrorists out of Canada are Canadian citizens. So what you're doing is you're allowing your citizens to have these so-called referendums and protests and hooliganism, to say that another state, another country should be carved out of India. Is that respecting the territorial integrity of a friendly country? Certainly not. And if they are doing so, won't you take action?
Yeah. What about the Five Eyes, who Canada works with very, very closely? And apparently there is an association with evidence or information sort of given by their partner intelligence, their intelligence partners. How do you see the working of the Five Eyes, as it were, towards these allegations which have been made against India?
See, since we are not a partner country, right, to Five Eyes, so I'll not have inside information or insights to how do Five Eyes work. But what was told to me that the initial information on the incident which happened in Surrey regarding this dreaded terrorist who was murdered came through one of the Five Eyes partners. But since we don't have an insight, I particularly don't have an insight as to how do they work, so I'll not be able to come to that.
One of the things that Canada has done in just the last couple of days is target members of the Indian media over here and suggest that they're part of an Indian influence operation. But it just seems strange that in the past, there have been journalists who have written about the Khalistan threat. There was a Canada-based Sikh journalist, Tara Singh Hayer, who was killed, right? So the threat that it's one thing to allege influence operations over here, but on your own soil, if journalists are being killed, allegedly by Khalistanis, it sort of represents a far graver threat, I would suggest.
I would also say that if it was done in Canada, it is freedom of expression. If Indian journalists who are actually using their freedom of expression do this, then this is a threat. I'm really surprised at this double standard, which in this particular case we have seen coming out of Canada. They should seriously think what they're saying and doing, and how do they know that this is an influence operation? So I would give this advice to my diplomatic friends and other Canadian officials to really look harder as to what do they say and what do they practice.
One or two more questions. While we talk about this, the Khalistani concern and the Khalistani threat, the Indo-Canadian population in Canada is almost entirely peaceful. They are incredibly successful. They have very long-standing links with India. And at the end of the day, they suffer if the relationship between the two countries goes down, right?
Absolutely. These bunch of people, these goons who are there, these Khalistani extremists and terrorists, they are very few in number. And they intimidate others to join them as far as the political aspect is concerned. That altogether would not make more than 100,000 people. We are 2 million Indo-Canadians. Others are peacefully going around doing their work, having a livelihood, taking care of the family, contributing to Canada. Hmm. There is another million Indian nationals who are also contributing to India while living in Canada. So it really really perplexes me that a handful of Canadian extremists and terrorists have been able to take the entire India-Canada relation or Canada-India relation to hostage.
What about Indian students? I believe we are the largest cohort of international students in Canada. They would have anxious parents. They would be worried about visas in the future. I was a student in Canadian universities. Both my degrees are from there. What would your message be to all of those, very concerned people back home? Their kids are over there.
What I would say is that their kids should be aware of the surroundings in which they are. They should not be influenced by the outreach from these Khalistani terrorists and extremists. And they should look after themselves well. In Canada at the moment, from these Khalistanis, I think there is a perceived threat to the larger Indian community, including the students' community. And therefore, if they see anything suspicious or they are reached out by someone whom they feel is suspicious, they should immediately report to the law and order authority of their region.
That's an important statement, sir. There is an outreach effort by Khalistani sympathizers in Canada towards Indian students.
Yes.
How does that happen?
So basically, how it works is that with the status of the Canadian economy at the moment, the jobs are not being created, and many students would go for jobs which are much below what they should be doing. They are unable to meet their ends. And some of these Canada-based and Canadian Khalistani extremists and terrorists will try to allure them by giving them money, by giving them food, and therefore trying to influence them with the kind of nefarious businesses that they are doing. Some of the students get attracted towards that. Then there is another thing which is happening. Some of the students would be asked to get photographed in front of the Indian High Commission in Ottawa or the two consulates, shouting anti-India slogans, desecrating our flag, or doing something which is disrespectful of India. And then they will go and seek asylum, because their version will be that if I go back to India now, I'll be punished.
So one way of people seeking asylum would be under the influence of Khalistani extremists. Students would come in front of the High Commission or one of our consulates, do something which insults, you know, our flag, our embassy, our High Commission, et cetera, and then seek asylum, right?
Absolutely.
And there have been cases of students like that being granted asylum.
Many, many such cases. And recently we have also come across some of the cases where Indian nationals would land at the airport with the visa, Canadian visa. They will not be allowed in. And in a few cases, very few cases, the authority, the Canadian authority there will ask them, look, if you file an asylum request, you'll be allowed in. What is this? So there are various kinds of influences which are pushing these students in the wrong direction. So parents, please talk to your children very regularly. Try to understand their welfare. Give them sane advice so that they don't fall on the wrong side of the society.
A final question. What happens to visas now? Because are they being processed at the same pace?
There will be slight delay. But thankfully for Indian visa, many Canadians do take e-visa.
Yes.
Wherein the consulates or the High Commission
outsources, right, to an agency that processes?
So that is the regular visa. Hmm. Then there you have e-visa. E-visa is processed through a system. So that continues. As far as the regular visa is concerned, since now we have a lesser number of people handling them, so yes, there will be delay, but we'll continue doing our best to grant the visas as soon as we can.
And we, in fact, have also information to suggest that Canadian diplomats in India, weren't necessarily kosher. They were involved in activities which worked against our interests.
All the time. So
how so?
We have always been saying that, look, what a double standard. We are being interfered by the Canadians in our domestic affairs in Punjab and various other places. And they call us interfering in their internal affairs. It's really bizarre. They should sometimes sit down and analyze what they are doing and what they're saying.
Thank you very much, sir, for being with us. It must have been a sad day that all of this happened and you had to come back, when your job was to build a relationship, but for all sorts of external factors.
It's a sad day. As an ambassador, I wanted to promote the relationship as much as I can. But when it comes to my national interest, I'm not ready to compromise.
Ambassador Sanjay Kumar Varma, thank you very much for speaking to us.
Thank you very much.
Well, there you have it. The first interview, once he's returned, Ambassador High Commissioner Sanjay Kumar Varma, the first Indian ambassador or high commissioner declared persona non grata by a country. telling us about the nature of the threat which exists in Canada, telling us very significantly about his concerns for Indian students, about the allegations which have been raised, and raising a lot of larger questions, particularly also on the history of concerns that India has had on threats, the fact that we've asked for more than 24 people to be extradited to this country. Has that happened? Not really. We leave it at that, come back with a lot more. Well, joining us now, Kevin Wong, Canadian Member of Parliament. Thank you very much, Mr. Wong, for being with us. It is very sad, India and Canada relations at this all-time low. One of the points, how would you respond to those who say that the Canadian statement alleging that there isn't conclusive evidence at the moment against the Indian diplomats or Indian officials who are allegedly involved in the murder of Nijjar, is that deeply problematic, that perhaps we should have seen a lot more of this evidence first?
So, Vishra, I think it's important for me to first say that Canada and India, we have long-standing history as fellow democracies, as members of the Commonwealth, but also the significant people-to-people ties, trade, and business. And I think those ties will remain and outlast any government. So in terms of your question, it is alarming. Like, we need to look at the facts and let's put everything in context. Mm-hmm. Canada, under Justin Trudeau, has been a doormat for foreign interference. And chief among those interfering in Canada has been the Chinese Communist Party. Now, let's be clear, though. A Canadian was murdered. And while Mr. Nijjar was obviously no choir boy, Canada as a country, just like India and any democracy, must be governed by rule of law. And if there's a murder, perpetrators have to be held accountable. But it is odd for the RCMP to host a press conference on a national holiday here in Canada that didn't really tell much, but conveniently happened to be the day before the Prime Minister's office was to take the stand on the issue of foreign interference, predominantly from the Chinese Communist Party, and only 2 days before the Prime Minister was. And so when he did take the stand, what happened? Instead of being held to account for turning a blind eye to Chinese foreign interference, he spent a significant time now speaking about these allegations of India's involvement, but when asked, is unable to present any evidence. How does that make any sense? And then for him to accuse people who have allegedly leaked intelligence on Chinese foreign interference as being criminals, only for us to find out that a week before Thanksgiving, his own national security and intelligence advisor briefed the Washington Post, a foreign media outlet, on India's alleged involvement. How does that make any sense? And so when you sit back, any normal, rational Canadian, any rational Indian, any rational thinking individual would question these two different approaches and ask if there is another motivation.
You know, what's a matter of huge concern over here in India is that for decades there have been concerns about Khalistani elements in Canada. In fact, there have been at least 26 extradition requests. And, you know, an extradition request is forwarded from India's government to the Canadian government after a process of due diligence. It's not been actioned upon. And a lot of these people, in fact, all, as I understand it, haven't been brought back at all. So when India argues, or some in India argue, that, look, there's a sense of double standards over here, India being accused of the murder of a Khalistani terrorist, but Canada having done absolutely nothing in terms of extraditing people who we believe have a strong criminal background. How would you respond to that?
And one of the things, Vishnu, that I reflect a lot about was it was a Khalistani extremist who committed the most violent and deadly terrorist attack in the world when it came to aviation terrorism up until 9/11. The bombing of the Air India Flight 182, that is still the most deadly terror attack on Canadians, that killed Canadians. And then it took 25 years for the victims and their families to get even piecemeal justice. And yet, Khalistani extremists continue to terrorize not just Indians abroad. I'm focused first and foremost on Canadians of Indian heritage. And even earlier this year, an Air India memorial was disrupted by Khalistani extremists who are perpetuating conspiracy theories and other things. And I continue to look at this government and ask them why. Why do they turn a blind eye to this? Why are they not stepping up to protect Canadians, not only of Indian heritage, but all others from any sort of extremist violence?
A final question. You know, I was speaking to Ambassador Sanjay Varma, who was, recalled to New Delhi at the end of this entire process. And he made a point which a lot of people in India would really take notice of, that India has the largest cohort of international students in Canada. Canadian institutions do fabulously with the involvement of Indian students, not just for their academic prowess, but because, it is a lot of revenue as well for them. That there may be, in fact, Khalistani attempts or attempts by those close to the Khalistani cause to reach out to students to try and influence them, to try and get them to be a part of their cause. Now, when you have 17, 18, 19-year-old kids in a country halfway around the world potentially being, I won't use the word targeted, but potentially being influenced by terrorist elements, then it becomes a huge problem. What would you tell the parents of these students, and what would you tell Indo-Canadians in your own constituency?
So I will be the first to say, I think, first and foremost, as a son of immigrants myself, I am grateful to Indians who choose to make Toronto, and many have chosen to make my community, my city, their home. Thank you for bringing us your talent and your skills. And for those who stay and continue to contribute, thank you. Now, I think there has been a real failure under this government's watch when it comes to the integrity of Canada's immigration systems, but also to ensure that those who do come have the right supports that they need. And because they've essentially flung open the doors, there have been people who, unlike those students, the Vishnu, that you refer to, who are applying to come to study and do it the right way and are following all of the rules, there are those who are exploiting it and coming through the cracks. And those bad actors are people that Canada has a duty to fight, to hold to account and deport if they're not Canadians.
Correct.
So that Indian students and any international students who choose to come to study in Toronto, my city, or anywhere else in Canada can do so that they can focus on their education without worry for them or their parents that they will be exploited or unduly influenced in a way that is harmful to both of our democracies.
Absolutely. Mr. Wong, thank you very much for being with us and sharing your thoughts. But I do tend to agree with you. At the end of the day, the relationship between India and Canada needs to be back up, and hopefully that will happen sooner than later. At the moment, though, it is a very unfortunate low in the relationship between Ottawa and New Delhi. But thank you very much for joining us, sharing your thoughts.
Thank you very much for having me, Vishnu. And hopefully next time we speak, it's because Canada and India's relations are improving. Take care.
Thank you.